listeners get their podcasts.
Broadcast of Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio is supported by the Adirondack Explorer magazine and Adirondack Almanac, providing regional news and commentary. Also available online at adirondackexplorer.org and adirondackalmanac.com. And by Cronin's Golf Resort, a regional destination for golf, dining, and lodging in the southern Adirondacks. Details at croninsgolfresort.com. It's 7 minutes past eight, and you're listening to Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio on this Thursday, June 24th. I'm Todd Moe. Monica Zandresky has the day off. Coming up, we're going to hear more about the child tax credit. Parents across the state soon eligible for monthly cash payments to offset the cost of raising a child. That story coming up in just a few minutes. But first, here's news from North Country Public Radio. The Canadian government released the details of its first step toward relaxing border restrictions. Starting at midnight on July 6th, fully vaccinated travelers may enter Canada without being subject to a mandatory quarantine and hotel stay. The change applies to Canadian citizens and permanent residents, as well as some U.S. residents traveling on essential business. Canadian Health Minister Patty Hajdu called the change a cautious adjustment and encouraged Canadians to get vaccinated. Details on the next phase of reopening have not yet been released. Non-essential travel to Canada for non-residents remains closed until at least July 21st. If you are a U.S. resident, you can visit travel.gc.gov to find out if you qualify to enter Canada under the current restrictions. Governor Cuomo says he will relinquish the emergency powers he's held for the past 15 months during the COVID-19 pandemic as infection rates continue to drop and vaccination rates slowly climb. Karen DeWitt reports.
The governor says he's giving up the emergency authority that gave him the power to close schools and businesses, require masks and social distancing, and regulate how many people could gather at one time, even in private homes.
The emergency is over. The state of emergency that I had declared in consultation with Commissioner Zucker, a health emergency, it expires tomorrow. It will not be renewed. It will punctuate the expiration of the emergency that we have been in.
Cuomo's wide-ranging powers became controversial in recent months as the governor faces a number of scandals, including sexual harassment allegations and the accuracy of nursing home death numbers during the pandemic. The Democratic-led legislature in early March moved to curb some of those powers. Republican lawmakers have argued for months that the emergency authority was no longer needed and should end. In a statement, Republican legislative leaders called the news welcome but long overdue. While many of the governor's emergency rules were unpopular, one that was well-received, the ability of bars and restaurants to offer takeout alcoholic beverages, also expires on Thursday. Bills in the legislature to extend the rule or make it permanent failed. Restrictions do still remain in effect for the more than 45% of New Yorkers who are not yet fully vaccinated. They still have to wear masks in public and social distance. Face coverings are still required regardless of vaccination status in healthcare settings, including nursing homes, as well as prisons and homeless shelters, and on public transit. The governor's announcement comes as the positivity rate for the virus at 0.36% statewide dropped for the 79th day in a row. 474 New Yorkers remain in the hospital and six died of the disease. Vaccination rates have stagnated. On June 15th, Cuomo announced that 70% of New Yorkers had received at least one dose of the vaccine. On Tuesday, that rate was 71.2%. 52.3% of New Yorkers are fully vaccinated, below the numbers needed to reach herd immunity. The governor says efforts are now focused on getting younger people vaccinated. He says a weekly college scholarship giveaway, which continues for one more week, has resulted in tens of thousands of more teenagers getting vaccinated. And he says his administration will continue to monitor the disease.
We're still watching COVID. It would be irresponsible and reckless not to be wary and vigilant about COVID. There are new variants. The Delta variant they're watching now spreads much more quickly than the original virus code.
The governor says post-pandemic challenges include rebuilding the economy. There's a worker shortage in the service industry, including restaurants and other businesses needed to help welcome back tourists. And the state's cities are experiencing growing gun violence. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Parents across New York State will soon be eligible for monthly cash payments to offset the cost of raising a child. Starting on July 15th, families will receive $250 per month for every child under the age of 18 and $300 per month for children under 6. The payments come as part of a change to the child tax credit in the Biden administration's American Rescue Plan. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand praised the coming start of the program.
This is the largest anti-poverty measure in decades. The first payments are scheduled for July 15th and will continue to be set monthly until December so that families don't have to wait until filing their tax return in 2022 to get the full credit.
Previously, the child tax credit was an annual deduction made during tax filing rather than a monthly cash benefit paid throughout the year. Payments will be sent automatically to all eligible New Yorkers who filed taxes in 2019 or 2020 tax filings. Anyone who did not earn enough money to pay income taxes or had a new child since filing can update their status at childtaxcredit.gov. You're listening to Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio. It is 8:13. Good morning. I'm Todd Moe. My co-host Monica has the day off. Stick around. Coming up in just a moment, lake sturgeon get help recovering from near extinction. And hyenas on natural selections. Those stories yet to come. 66 degrees here in Canton right now. Nice day. Sunshine. Blue sky. Highs around 80 this afternoon. Winds out of the south-southwest. Northern Light is supported by Gray and Gray and Associates, CPAs, a proactive accounting and financial services firm in northern New York with offices in Canton and Messina. GrayCPAS.com. And by Renew Architecture and Design, designing camps, custom homes, and more throughout NCPR's listening region. Details at renewarchitecture.com. This is music by Canton composer Danny Thomas. He created the Northern Light theme music. Lake sturgeon are the ancient giants of the Great Lakes and the St. Lawrence River. They've been around since the dinosaurs. They can grow up to 7 feet long, and they can live as long as humans or longer. But overfishing and pollution pushed them to the brink of extinction in the 1900s. Biologists are carefully orchestrating the sturgeon's revival with the help of one of the world's most valuable caviars, some clay, and a few turkey feathers. David Summerstein has this story from 2017.
It's lake sturgeon spawning season right now, and the prime place to find the huge fish in New York is in a side canal of the St. Lawrence River near the big hydropower dam in Messina. So every year, biologists get together and catch more than 100 mature sturgeon in nets for what they call an egg take. The moment I arrive, four burly guys in hip waders are lifting maybe an 80-pound fish out of a tank.
It's all muscle. So you just got to hold on stronger.
One guy rubs the fish's belly and out spurts eggs. They look like lentils as they stream into a metal bowl. And then it's a blur of action.
Okay, good? Sample?
Another guy fills a test tube to sample later. Someone else squirts a syringe of sturgeon sperm onto the eggs.
Quick dip, activate. 20 mils, just pour it in.
You're going to split
right in.
Cameras from the New York Times and National Geographic click as the bowls pass to yet another guy sitting in the shade. He adds in a powdered clay called Fuller's Earth and starts to stir.
You're stirring eggs with a feather.
With a feather.
What kind of feather is that?
That's a turkey feather. Nothing fancy. Feathers, you know, very soft, delicate, won't damage the eggs as they're being stirred.
Overseeing this whole operation is Roger Clint, aquatic biologist with New York's Department of Environmental Conservation. He taps a stopwatch.
30 seconds, Dave.
Everything has to go just right for these eggs to grow into fingerlings. The stirring prevents the eggs from sticking together, Clint explains. This is a delicate process created by a team of biologists from state and federal agencies with the help of the New York Power Authority and the St. Regis Mohawk Tribe. They've learned through trial and error since sturgeon stocking started in New York in the 1990s.
The sturgeon are more complicated than most other species that are cultured.
The biggest problem is sturgeon have a longer life cycle than us humans. A female sturgeon doesn't even mature until it's 20 years old, says Clint. And then it only produces eggs every few years.
So when you deplete the population, it takes a long time to rebuild those generations. So what we're doing here is we're trying to jumpstart areas that have sturgeon.
These mature fish grew up in the St. Lawrence and its tributaries, the Grass, the Racket, the St. Regis Rivers, all running through the Akwesasne Mohawk Reservation. Jessica Jock is with the tribe's Environment Division.
I think there's a lot of pride knowing that the fish that are stocking the state of New York come from our waters here.
Things are getting better for sturgeon. They're protected from overfishing across the U.S. now. Their water is cleaner. But worldwide, there are still serious pressures on their recovery.
Price per pound, this fish, the sturgeon group, is the most valuable fish on the planet.
Sturgeon caviar is a prized delicacy, says National Geographic photographer Jennifer Hayes. There are fishing bans in Central Europe, but an illegal trade still thrives. Hayes is here scouting for a possible cover story.
What do you imagine, like, the headline being for National Geographic?
There's 100 different headlines. Dinosaur fish. Coolest fish ever. Most valuable fish on the planet.
We're good. See what happens.
The eggs gathered here will go to hatcheries in central New York and Wisconsin. Hopefully, they'll grow into 5 to 10,000 fingerlings to be released across New York and in other states this fall. Only a fraction will survive into adulthood. The DEC recently announced signs that the egg tank is working. Field biologists found teenage sturgeon in the Oswegatchie River near Hewelton, the best such population since the 1960s. Scott Schluter of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service says the first big goal of this project is to get lake sturgeon off the threatened species list.
These fish, you know, they've been around since the dinosaurs. And in one human lifespan of 100 years, we've almost wiped all sturgeon off the globe.
Schluter says when he looks at these eggs fertilized here today, he imagines them growing into sleek adults, still slicing through the water when his grandchildren have children of their own. David Summerstein, North Country Public Radio, Messina.
The story first aired in 2017. You can find photos and a video of harvesting sturgeon eggs on our website at ncpr.org. New York State forest rangers had a busy year in 2020. According to data released by the DEC, forest rangers carried out almost 500 search and rescue missions and extinguished nearly 200 wildfires. Rangers have been staying busy this year as well. Last week, forest rangers executed a search and rescue when two hikers in the Cranberry Lake Wild Forest became lost, attempting to bushwhack a shortcut to Hedgehog Pond. The DEC's Raybrook Dispatch Center was able to make phone contact with the pair, allowing rangers to guide the hikers to safety. The total wildland search took about 2 hours. And anyone heading into the woods is encouraged to visit the DEC website, hikesmart.org. You're listening to Northern Light on North Country Public Radio. I'm Todd Moe. Monica has the day off. Coming up in just a moment, Natural Selections. Also, stick around for Bird Note at 8:30. House Wrens, one of our most familiar songbirds. And we'll also check in with two of our news interns, Maddie Amico and Hannah Finley, wrapping up their news internships here at North Country Public Radio. We'll hear their takes on their experience covering regional news here in the North Country. Stay tuned for that conversation. 67 degrees now in Canton, sunshine, winds out of the south-southwest, and highs today near 80.
Is there a more maligned and mischaracterized animal than the hyena? I mean, you were talking about this TV show you watched, and I'm thinking of all the other representations of hyenas that we're all familiar with as kind of a skulking, savage, evil creature in the dark.
Well, yeah.
I mean, they're not even, you know, my first thought is, why are they built that way? Why do they look like that? They look like they're skulking.
They look funny. They've got the front legs are longer than the back legs, so they look sort of hunched.
Yeah, they look like they're kind of scooting along all the time, Mickey.
Yeah, and, folks that were not native to Africa that were there studying, looking at wildlife, were usually out during the day, so you'd see them around carcasses. Mm-hmm. And you think, oh, they're a skulking scavenger. And a lot of traditional cultures in Africa never liked them either. They say they're out at night and
they make
the
weird
witches
sounds.
Ride them. Yeah, they make these weird sounds, the giggling and maniacal laughter. So as usual, whether it's with animals or people, as you get to know them, you find other sides to them that can make them more endearing. And that's one good thing. If you do have a good nature documentary on television where someone spent the time to be out there to get to know the animals and get good footage, you say, oh my gosh, I never knew that, and there's a lot more to them than I thought.
Yeah.
So now I'm a hyena fan, spotted hyenas. But that's actually happening in the biological sciences. People are starting to realize now because of those sorts of studies that, for example, if you're studying intelligence, especially social intelligence that lets you interact with individuals like humans are known for.
Or chimpanzees, say.
Yeah, we tend to look at other primates, mm-hmm. let's say, to see what are all the relationships. And it turns out hyenas should be on that list, too.
Really?
They have amazing social structures. These are the spotted hyenas that people call them the laughing hyenas. And they live in clans that can have up to 60 or 80 individuals in them, all with a very strict social hierarchy.
These are not like packs of dogs or something, or coyotes.
Right. It's different from dogs. Actually, hyenas may look a little dog-like, but they're not dogs. They're not cats. Their closest relatives would be mongoose, actually, so they're a separate thing. But the clans are run by the females, and so there's a dominant female, and her status is actually inherited.
A
true matriarch or a royalty lineage. So mm-hmm. her babies, her cubs, grow up with higher status than the other ones. And so they can change, like they can have a coup or something like that too. But
her daughter, a daughter of hers, would inherit that.
Her position and have an advantage to that. And the females are a little bigger than the males. So every one of them knows each other as an individual and knows their strict pecking order. So the more dominant animal can take food away from the others. Any female can take a kill away from any male. So the males are all subordinate. And then within the males, they have their own hierarchy too.
Cool. So some naturalist hung out with hyenas for long enough to figure all this out?
Yeah, and there are ways to tell individuals partly by how they act, of course, because they're confident, but just things like the trademark laugh or the giggles they have. They actually do giggle, you could say. It's often in times of stress, like when they're maneuvering around who's going to get what food, mm-hmm. or if there's a clan confrontation with another clan and they're giggling, or they're facing off against lions and things. So you could almost say it's like nervous laughter, like I just did. But you can tell by the tone or the style of the giggle whether the individual is older or younger, if it's a dominant one.
Male or female?
Male or female. So like a dominant female will sort of have a steady, rhythmic laugh.
Not quite so nervous.
And the subordinate one that's sort of cringing, it's going up and down and different kinds of sounds.
So what's the advantage of having this huge, well-organized clan?
Well, you can...
I mean, there must be a reason that that they do that.
Right. There are advantages to be social, just like you think with us. You get more resources and you can do more things if you're a cooperative, cohesive group. And so you can watch, if you do watch these documentaries, or, you know, if you did, were lucky enough to go out and watch it in the wild, you'd find situations where one clan comes up against another to dispute a territory and the bigger group wins. Or if you're out hunting and some lions come along and want to take your kill away from you, then if they outnumber you or you outnumber them, that will determine what happens there. And if you have a big enough group, you can hunt bigger prey. So the biggest hyena groups hunt things as big as giraffes and Cape buffalo.
Wow. So do you think all this information that's coming out will change our minds, our sort of collective idea about hyenas?
Well, a lot of us hope so, because they've been maligned so much, people think they don't need to be conserved. And there are problems with habitat loss and overhunting and things like that that threaten hyenas as much as other wildlife.
And we just don't even want to hear about it. Right. Thanks very much, Dr. Kurt Steger of Paul Smith College. I'm Martha Foley at St. Lawrence University.
Natural Selections is produced by North Country Public Radio with natural sounds by Ted Mack. The program is underwritten by Paul Smith's, the College of the Adirondacks, 800-421-2605.
Broadcast of Natural Selections here on North Country Public Radio is supported by the Glenn and Carol Pearsall Adirondack Foundation, now accepting grant applications from North Country not-for-profits until August 31st, pearsallfoundation.org, and by the Animal Clinic of Malone, open Monday through Friday for medical appointments, surgery, or diagnostic workups for canine or feline family members. New pets, welcome. It's 8:28, and you're listening to Northern Light. Thanks for joining us. As we all know, the pandemic put several things on hold: jobs, school, and events. Way back in January 2020, before the pandemic started, we had two students from St. Lawrence University start an internship with us. The coronavirus sent them home, but they were able to come back more than a year later to work in the NCPR newsroom this summer. Maddie Amico and Hannah Finley are here with me now to talk about their experience and share some of their highlights. Good morning, Hannah and Maddie.
Good morning, Todd.
So, how would you describe this experience of working and studying through the pandemic? Hannah, you want to start? Uh-oh, wait. Your mic is not working quite well. I'm sorry, Hannah. Could you maybe use Maddie's mic just for now? You can share that mic. I'm sorry about that little technical glitch, but we want to be able to hear your voice. So
better
start
now?
Again. Yeah, it's much better.
Okay.
Thank you. So to start again, and how would you describe this experience of, you know, being an intern and even studying during the pandemic?
Yeah, well, there were lots of internet issues, which is kind of to be expected during remote learning. So you really had to get used to that quickly, and the changing syllabus was really difficult too, but I'd say it was very rewarding, and it was a crazy year, but somehow we got through it.
So. And Maddie?
Yeah, it was interesting to say the least. You have to get really used to looking at a computer screen all day, and also looking at yourself on a computer screen when you're on Zoom and stuff, and that definitely takes some getting used to. But I think my professors at St. Lawrence did a really great job of making the adjustment. But yeah, it was an interesting year, to say the least.
Okay, so those were the challenges. What about some of the highlights? What has been a highlight of this internship for you? And do you have any, you know, maybe some favorite moments or favorite audio clips to share?
Yeah, I'd say now that things have been opening up more, one of the highlights has been going out and about and interviewing people and hearing people's stories, which is a lot of fun. We also had a news retreat last week, and that was really exciting to get and meet everybody in person for the first time in like over a year and talk about our values as a news team and as journalists. And I'd say one of my favorite stories that I covered was the chicken wing shortage in across the country, but especially in the North Country. I went to Doug's Tavern in Hewelton and talked to a bunch of people there that are huge chicken wing fans in their Wednesday wing night. And my favorite clip of audio is from Michelle Lattiser from Hewelton. And she was talking about how the wing prices have changed at Doug's.
I've heard about it, but I don't see any problems. We have plenty of chicken wings here at Doug's.
Yeah,
I would pay 91 cents. Oh,
yeah. 91 cents?
Okay, Maddie, what about you?
Yeah, I also loved being part of the news retreat, finally being able to see everyone in an in-person setting and just, you know, talking about what it means to be a journalist in this day and age and how to be a better journalist. And we talked about the importance of getting, you know, diverse voices on the air and trust from the public and just connecting stories, people, and ideas. And that was just, that was really a special thing to be a part of. But in terms of my favorite story, I would say the story I did about a girl from Lake Placid who handwrites her own neighborhood newspaper and then delivers it on bikes with her five brothers and sisters. Her name is Rose Wensler. She was so cool, and that was just a really fun day of reporting. Hannah came with me. So this clip is the clip I closed the story with, and it's the whole Wensler family.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
I love that clip. That is really fun. So what are your plans moving forward? Hannah, what's happening this summer?
Well, this summer I'm going to be lifeguarding on Lake Ontario. It'll be my third year. And then I'm also going to do as many of the 46 high peaks as I can.
Wow.
So cool. I'm really excited for that.
Good luck. Yeah.
Thank you.
Maddie?
When I get home, I'm going to be celebrating my birthday in a few weeks, so that'll be really fun. And then my family's going to do a little bit traveling out west. I've never been to California, Arizona, and Vegas, so we're going to go explore out there. And then I'm just training for my upcoming senior volleyball season, so I'll be staying pretty busy.
Now, Hannah, you're going to be news editor, right?
Yep, for the Hill News.
Yeah. And Maddie, you're also going to be writing. Right?
Yep. Yeah, I'm going to be the sports editor. So we'll still be very involved in journalism on St. Lawrence's campus.
That's very cool. We have about a minute, and I have a pop quiz question for both of you. And I want to know, what is it that you tell your friends and other students about working for public radio, for public media? And how can we, you know, I'm the older generation here. How do we excite your generation to be part of public media?
I can go first. You know, I think public media is such a important public service in this day and age of, you know, information and technology, and being part of an organization that spreads that information is really empowering. And, you know, just being able to tell people's stories that wouldn't otherwise be told, I think that's a really special thing that everybody should try.